Hello, smart friends, and welcome to the first episode of the Smart Community Podcast. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, go back and listen to yesterday's episode, which is all about why I've rebranded to expand the conversation away from just cities. As you probably know by now, the conversations always come back to the human beings at the center anyway. So broadening the conversation to be more about smart communities is so important. Having said all that, we will still be using the term smart cities because it's a common industry term and because most people are quite familiar with it at the moment. This episode is no different, and although the first part of the conversation is very much around smart cities and we use that term a lot, you will see that we do shift focus to be more inclusive of smart communities about halfway through. So in this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I interview Monica Wolf, the co-founder of Startup Muster. Startup Muster is a data-focused company that measures and publishes the progress, challenges, and opportunities within the Australian startup ecosystem. Their 2018 report is out now, and you can find it at www.startupmuster.com. In this episode, Monica shares her passion for the future economic and social well-being of Australians, how childhood travel and her background in economics sparked her interest in the smart city space, and she tells us about some of the projects she's involved in. We do talk a lot about technology because that's where Monica spends a lot of her time, but we also talk about the relationship we have with our technology, the evolution of our places, and how they can serve us as a community. Monica talks about the need for courage for all of us as we are experiencing a lot of change and will continue to do so going forward, and the emerging trends of co-working spaces, the sharing economy, better use of dead space, and why amidst all of this tech talk, we must include the arts in our smart conversations. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community. Smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Monica. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I am doing awesomely. Let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us about your background and what you are passionate about?
Sure. So my background is in startup entrepreneurship, especially around technology startup entrepreneurship. I co-founded and have run an Australian startup called Startup Muster, which captures all the statistics about what technology companies, early stage and emerging technology companies are doing in this country. And I am really passionate about the future economic and social well-being of Australians.
That's awesome. So tell us what sparked your interest in the smart city space.
Yeah, so even from when I was a child, we traveled quite a bit. And it meant that I spent quite a lot of time just seeing how different cities operated around the world, mostly the US and Europe. But, you know, even from a young age, really starting to understand that just how we do it here doesn't necessarily mean that's how we do it overseas. And then, you know, I have this economics background, and what I love about that is, you know, you've got macro and micro theories, but then actually, how does that impact and influence behavior at an individual level? So kind of putting the figures and the human element into, you know, all these policy decisions that we're making and big grandiose concepts, and actually how does that affect you and I in our regular day and our regular lives? And then also through Startup Muster, I've just come across all of these different technology companies that a building technology that is going to impact how our cities run, how we engage with each other, even to the point where, you know, using big data and using a technology to help influence decision making with governments around, you know, around planning, around, you know, electricity usage, or, you know, even just how the population density and how it moves throughout the day. There's so much that we can really start to track and understand about our society. So yeah, and then it all just comes together in this smart cities realm, because, you know, that's place and that's people and that's how we live and how we interact.
Awesome. So tell us what a smart city means to you.
I think a smart city for me, it's a city that runs seamlessly. So, you know, and it's one that makes sense, where, you know, we are able to just go about our day-to-day lives without being impacted by concerns. Even to the easiest way would be something like just having proper cell reception throughout the entire city. But, you know, where things like changes in infrastructure and transport and these public goods that we all utilize every single day aren't being put up for political debate. It's something that we actually use information. We use, like technology sourced, content to help build out models where we've got a really good business case to say, you know what? Actually, we need this here because all of these factors suggest that we do. So it's not a politicized element. It's actually just based off of data and off of, statistics and information that's coming at us. So yeah, a smart city for me is one that's seamless, one that works for the people in it, and just makes sense.
Yeah, cool. No, I like that. I like that. I agree. I think I really like that makes sense. I haven't really heard that before and it's totally true. I just haven't really thought about it like that. It just, yeah, cause I guess that kind of lends itself to each smart city or each city or each region or each town or whatever being different too, because what makes sense for one place will make, you know, not so much sense in another place and vice versa.
Exactly. So it's really about taking that local view of things and understanding, you know, what's the cultural components of the city? What do we look like? What are we, you know, are we a port city? Are we, you know, or even, you know, you can't look at New York and look at Sydney and just go, oh, you know, what worked there works here. And it's also the history of the city. I mean, take Sydney, for instance. We had trams about 100 years ago. And then we don't have trams and now we're getting trams again. And you kind of go, does it make sense? Does it not make sense? I don't know.
It's like fashion goes in cycles.
Yeah, but it's just taking a lot of different factors and taking the history of the city into account, because the history also forms how people engage with each other and what we're used to and what we would be willing to potentially entertain for our city.
No, I like that too. Looking at the history and then bringing that into the, you know, into the future, into the now, for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us why you think that the smart city concept is so important.
Oh God, it is important for many reasons. It's going to a point where it's kind of like air, you know, we shouldn't have to be able to see it, but we shouldn't have to worry about not having it. If you want to take like a really just an economics point of view on things, it's also about us, about smart cities or cities in Australia remaining competitive. So, you know, we're thinking about tourism, we're thinking about migration, we're thinking about workforce of the future. If our city is deemed to be dumb or not smart or not creative in the same ways that these other cities are becoming, then that's a serious concern about attraction of these various different financial flows into the city. So there's that side of things. But then there's also cities play another role in the fact that technology is a big part of the concept of smart cities, and our relationship with technology and our usage and our involvement with technology is not going away. If anything, it's going to be enhanced, and it's going to become even more involved in our day to day. So this smart cities concept is really important in terms of, well, what does that look like? You know, what is our relationship with technology? Does it have to be incredibly overt? Do we want to walk past a retail store and get a push notification that there's a pair of shoes in there that we might have put in our wish list on Amazon? Is that what we want in our smart city? Or is it, you know, that potentially we would get a push notification to let us know that actually there's a green space 200 meters up ahead and, you know, it's 3 p.m. so you might be a little bit tired and want to go lie down. So it's like, well, how do we want our relationship with technology to be? And so I think that there's some really amazing ways that we could be playing with this idea of the evolving city, but there's, you know, there's also going to be some less smart ways that we might be involved in developing our smart cities. But I think the real focus is that this concept of smart city and the evolution of our city and the evolution of technology and our relationship altogether is not going away. So we really need to think long and hard about what that's going to look like and how is it going to serve us as a community rather than serving the interests of, you know, potentially big business or whatever large scale infrastructure projects have been decided on behind closed doors.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you're totally right with saying that that choice and our relationship with technology, what is it that we actually want? And, you know, what one person might want, the other person might want to turn off. And I think it's important to have that choice there available. So then we can kind of, work with technology and have a positive relationship with technology rather than just, bitching and complaining about it all the time that it's taking over our lives without us knowing. So that's why I think we need so many people involved in this conversation, because smart cities touches on so many different aspects.
Yeah. And I mean, we're also talking here about, well, how can we create spaces that are going to be reprieves from our technology? So, you know, how do we incorporate those green spaces into the cities and give people spaces where they feel that they can relax and they can potentially shut off from the ruckus of the day to day. So yeah, it's like playing with dead spaces, and it's looking at, well, you know, if we're becoming less and less of a, I mean, more of a sharing economy, what would that look like even in a commercial retail sense? And how can we facilitate that? And I'm going a little bit off tangent, but you know.
No, that's fine.
there's some really fun things to think about, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
But I think the one thing I didn't touch on that I think is really important is like smart cities has the potential for increasing positive externalities. So there's already been research done that street lighting leads to decreases in crime and sexual assault. Well, what else can we now do, thinking of street lighting as a primitive form? What is this 21st century version of the street lighting concept? And how can we start to provide more positive externalities or remove at least the dangers that exist currently when you are out and about engaging mm-hmm. with strangers and being in public spaces?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's definitely something that we could talk more about, or, you know, start to have those conversations about what is possible in that space as well, rather than just talking about the technology, but that ripple effect of what it can do in a positive sense.
100%. Yeah.
Cool. Well, how do you think that Australia is kind of embracing the smart city concept?
I think we're dabbling. We want to look at a most recent example of, say, a very strategic, planned out use of space and how it was kind of built in a way to showcase smart city potential. You've got, you know, Barangaroo. And you go down there and it's got a very different feel to the rest of the CBD, in terms of how it's been orchestrated and how they've, you know, kind of placed different retail outlets around in different spaces. And so they've really gone for a different look, feel and touch than we've seen in any other part of Sydney. What I'd love to see a little bit more of is, especially, you know, at a local council level, if we, you know, because each of them are trialing different things in terms of smart cities. A really good example is like parking meters, you know, and you sometimes see two councils doubling up on testing the same concept. And I'm like, well, is that really effective? Like if Bondi is potentially doing, you know, looking at paid parking, new paid parking scenarios, maybe Mosman shouldn't be doing it. Maybe Mosman should be focusing on another area. And then they could do shared learning. Then I know that that's, you know, very airy-fairy, but I think that it would be a way of being able to get to a point of being smarter as a city, taking Sydney, for example, if we actually didn't all double up on doing the same thing, but actually allowed different different councils or different local government areas to focus in on one particular area and then share the learning. So it's that collective learning that I think would help us to move more quickly with this. And I think, you know, the Greater Sydney Commission has done a lot of work on what Sydney might look like in 2050. And if we're to get anywhere near there, we've got quite a lot of work still to do. So, you know, I think Newcastle has got some interesting concepts. So from a demographic point of view, Newcastle is kind of a sample of what a regular Australian city looks like. And so I know that they test and trial elements there, which is quite interesting. But I really don't have anything I could grasp at right now to kind of elaborate on, sadly.
No, that's cool. No, I think you're right. And I was having a conversation recently with people from some councils, and that collaboration and, you know, sharing learnings and that kind of thing is definitely happening now. And also one of the other people that was kind of there was saying, you know, death by pilot, which is happening a lot, which I, you know, it's such a balance, like, because I think we need to pilot things, but yeah, I agree. Like, let's kind of share the learnings across, you know, the different councils, and obviously each one will have their own particular flavor if when they, you know, scale it out. But I think even if you build on what someone else is doing, is really important, even globally. I think that's a real key area that we could improve on to, like you said, accelerate, the adoption of, you know, smart concepts.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, change doesn't come from doing the same thing. So this is a, you know, it might be a little bit of, you know, death by a sprint or whatnot, but it's kind of the necessary evil because we're going into terrain that's never been done before. And it's unrealistic to assume that we're suddenly going to do it completely right the first go, or that we're not going to be iterating on this. So, you know, and it can start as simply with the councils as updating their preferred supplier lists so that these emerging technology companies that might have something really amazing to offer actually have an opportunity to get a foot in the door.
Yeah.
Rather than sticking to the true tried and tested of the companies that they've been procuring from previously. Cause, you know, same doesn't equal change. So that's not so much what I'm seeing, but I guess what I would like to be seeing, which, there's a few things like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've seen a little bit, which I'm excited about. And when you have conversations with the councils that are doing, you know, thinking about different procurement models, you know, you don't have to convince them. They know that they need that what they know that they need to do something. They just need a bit of a hand to know what exactly it is and who should be involved. And, you know, they don't want to buy a shiny toy. They want, you know, real kind of deep, you know, understanding of what technology or what project or what thing we're trying to, or the problem that we're trying to solve, not, you know, the solution to try and fit a problem that we have to find. So yeah, no, I'm having some great conversations across, you know, councils and different tech companies as well that are kind of emerging. And I think you're right, changing up that procurement model, and it doesn't have to be forever. That's the other thing too. I think a lot of the old school business models of procuring things were like long-term leases or contracts or whatever. Yeah. And I just don't think we're expecting that anymore, because, you know, you or I might be in a completely different job in 5 years' time. And that wouldn't be a complete change. That'll be quite normal, I think. And particularly with, you know, the younger generations coming up as well. I think that's where the procurement kind of has to catch up to that, because it won't be the same sort of people making those decisions.
Yeah. I mean, even the role of councillors and the role of those public servants working for council, those roles might change significantly in the next 20 years as well. So, I mean, and I know you like to talk a lot about, you know, the interaction between like government and industry and those different disciplines. And this is a perfect example. You know, if a council really wants to be sure that they are procuring something that's going to be sound, reasonable, and build out KPIs and expectations around it, like, build out an advisory group related to a certain technology area, or, you know, have a list of experts that you draw upon. And, you know, it's not full-time gigs or anything like that. We're talking about, you know, bespoke one-off where it's like, okay, well, we're going through this tender process. Will you be my expert in residence on this particular topic? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And therefore they're insourcing that information and can start to make some, you know, sound, rational decisions. But yeah, all of this, what we're going through at the moment, requires courage. Even the smart cities element, it's something that, you know, it's a response to what we're already as individuals experiencing, which is significant amount of change, significant amount of digital connectedness. And that's changing how we interact with each other physically. So it's a fascinating time.
It is. Yeah. I'm excited to be involved. So let's talk about some of the things that you're working on right now. I think I've taken up too much airtime. Let's talk about you.
Gosh. Okay. So, well, I mean, Startup Muster, we have our fifth annual report coming out in October. And so we've had over 500,000 questions answered over the last 5 years. And we do go into place. We do ask for postcodes. We want to understand what these emerging technology companies and the businesses that support them are experiencing and what they're working on and what are they looking to achieve. So that's quite useful. And we do get a lot of interest from like different levels of government about the data that we collect because it can help make informed decisions. You know, there was the announcement by the New South Wales Premier about Tech Central, which, you know, apart from the announcement, not much, you know, it's very early days, but, you know, being part of those discussions and those around what that precinct would look like. And that is very much in line with smart cities. You know, what will this specific community look like? How will it engage with each other? What businesses or what other, what infrastructure do we need? What businesses are going to be there? So it's very, I guess it's our little version of thinking in a futuristic way about, well, if we're building a precinct, one that we hope will, you know, be around for a while, what do we need and what does that look like? So yeah, it's kind of that kind of work. And then personally, I'm really quite fascinated with the concept of community, especially how it works and how we feel engaged and how we feel connected with each other as we're moving more and more towards online communities. But there's still that role that space has to play, like physical space and physical interaction. So how are we as individuals managing that right now is something that I'm putting a lot of thought into. And so there'll probably be something coming out soon around that too.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. So I imagine you have to work with a lot of different, you know, kind of disciplines and, you know, industries and that kind of thing. So I'm keen to hear your thoughts on how you think we can better integrate across different disciplines, government and industry.
Yeah, I mean, with government, it comes back to that, you know, what level are we talking about, you know, local, state, federal, and, you know, especially when we're talking about cities, we're mostly focusing on local and state. And they in themselves have a really big interaction with each other. I mean, look at, you know, what's happened with Sydney recently, you know, in the CBD, it's City of Sydney, but then a lot of state development has happened. So, first it's looking at, well, okay, we've got these three levels of government. And what are they looking to achieve and what are their incentives and what do they envisage? And then, yeah, with the industry, government relations thing is always, there's a lot that's spoken about. I mean, we could throw universities in there as well. And it's kind of like the trifecta of the kinds of ongoing conversations that seem to be happening. And I guess the thing that we've kind of come across the most is allowing industry to build business and be business. And government just setting out the framework to allow that. So, you know, not, you know, government as trying to do business never works out well. But I think in this case, especially with predicting the future and thinking about where our cities are going to go, both, you know, mainstream traditional industries and government need to be aware of the risks associated with not engaging with the emerging technology companies. And also the benefits that can come from it. You know, this, this isn't a marketing exercise anymore. It's not, okay, well, we'll create some startup grant or, we're a bank, so we're going to sponsor a fintech competition. It goes to a much deeper level than that, where we're really trying to affect change. But until there's like actual strong commitment from government and industry to, in form of procurement, in form of, building out long-term or at least establishing, mutually beneficial business arrangements with our technology companies, then, we can't really progress too much. Or what we'll find is that, the technology that's being adopted by those different sectors is coming from overseas rather than sourcing from our own local pool, which is a real shame. Because we need to actually trust in our own technology for once. And I know I focus a lot on technology, but, it is the area I spend most of my time in anyway. So, yeah.
No, definitely. And I agree. I think, and that kind of, I might just go straight into this next question, which really leads on from that, which is what do you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about enough?
Okay. Well, in my world, especially around smart cities, we're not talking enough about the arts. We really need to be. We have some really great examples of where, you do these hybrid industries of art and technology, and you can really develop out some beautiful, beautiful solutions. So I think, at least in my world, when we're talking about smart cities, it's very linear. And it's very, specific to tech. So in my world, I'd love to see more discussion around, a smart city doesn't just have great internet or, cost-effective lighting or proper use of dead space. It's got beauty and it's got intricate artistic offerings. So I think that at least in my space, that's not being talked enough about. And yeah, so I think what else is there? So co-working spaces is an interesting one. Co-working, if your listeners don't know, it's when businesses work out of all different types of businesses work out of the same space. So you, as a business owner, save on the operational expenses of, having to manage getting in Wi-Fi and cleaners and all this stuff. And there's usually a community element. It's been developed out of models that have worked for small technology companies. But like what we've seen with WeWork, which has co-working spaces all around the world, and it's a billion-dollar company of some sort. I think it's like $29 billion or something. They offer space for larger businesses. So that have 90 employees or 60 employees. And so that's a really interesting concept, because what we're having now is essentially it would look like a normal corporate floor with all these desks and all these people. But instead of it all being one company, there's six different companies. And it's a really interesting use of space. It's a really interesting concept for community building, because you end up creating connections with people from other businesses. And there's no company internal fighting going on, because you're both working for different businesses. So I think the co-working element and how it's going to really progress from being a technology offering or an offering to startups to being an offering to a variety of different businesses, whether it's professional service providers, all the way to, a whole suite of different types of businesses. Yeah. I think that's going to be really fascinating. And then there's also like the sharing economy, So we've got, Uber and Lyft and all that, and all those offerings for the car, and we've got Deliveroo and all that for food. It's like, well, what's going to be that next offering where we're decentralizing, I guess, is probably not the best way to describe it actually. So that's the kind of stuff that comes across in my world. And also we're seeing a more and more use of dead space. And what I mean by that is like, you've got a bar that's open at night, but what's being used of the space during the day? It's not open. It's not making any money. So how are we using that space? And we're actually seeing a couple of co-working spaces, like pop-up co-working spaces that, during the day, it's actually, an office space for, you know, digital nomads. And then it turns into the regular bar in the evening. Yeah, so there's just some really interesting uses of space that I think are going to evolve over time. And, yeah, those are some of the things I'm thinking about.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I am also thinking about those things. The arts is that's definitely one that hasn't been spoken about on the podcast much.
Wow.
So yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for sharing that because it kind of really, because you know I ask this question all the time, and I think that's the first time that that one's been mentioned. And I think it is really important. I mean, I'm an engineer, but I also appreciate beautiful spaces and things. And I think if we can work together rather than just, because I know like we have to, you know, we engage, for example, artists or whoever, when we're doing, you know, projects, community projects and that kind of thing. But it's, I think it's still very much not a collaborative approach. It's more just, you know, a hiring approach. And I think if we kind of can incorporate that beauty with the technology and, you know, what the community needs, I think that'll really make some really nice spaces. And, you know, just bring different thoughts, you know, different backgrounds to the table as well, which I think could be really, interesting to see the outcomes.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially giving people the allowance to be creative as well, you know, because you might randomly see some street performance because that's what's going to happen on that night in that specific location. And you might, you know, it might inspire you to go and do something that you wouldn't normally do, whether it's, you know, like a really good example is there's a thing called Welcome Choir, and they take over every month in Newtown. They take over the Marlboro Hotel upstairs, and you pay $10 and all these strangers get together and you learn a song and you sing the song. So last time I went, it was Elvis. And it's, you know, how often do we as young, like professionals, white collar professionals or blue collar professionals have the opportunity to just sing and be in a community and not feel afraid or shamed or scared, or embarrassed. So, there's, I think if we don't include that element, and you know, there's art also in the food that we eat. But yeah, if we don't include all of that, then we're really missing out on a lot of creativity and a lot of joy and a lot of happiness.
Yeah. I just got one more example with the art thing. I was just talking to someone, just before I was speaking to you, and she was saying how she's writing about, 5G and, you know, how the implications, like everyone's talking about, you know, the low latency and all that kind of stuff and what's that it's all going to mean, but it actually requires a lot more infrastructure, and how are we going to incorporate that into our streets so it's not an eyesore. So it's important to kind of have both those elements in there, because we don't want to just like create another problem and you know, make our streets look really ugly just for the sake of, you know, having this low latency connection.
Yeah, it's like we don't want to be one of those derelict future cities that we see in movies like The Fifth Element.
Yeah. It's been so great to chat with you, Monica. Thanks so much. I really just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on LinkedIn under Monica Wolf. If you want to take part in Startup Muster, you can head to startupmuster.com. So if you're a startup or a business that supports startups. And then I'm also on Twitter as Mon Wolf, and also on Instagram as Mon Wolf. And yeah, so that's, I am very digitally available on the social media networks.
Awesome.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Community Podcast is what you're looking for.